basketball fans, to another edition of the Nuggets Inc. podcast, your Denver Nuggets podcast presented by the Denver Post. My name is Nick Kosmider. I'm joined by colleague Gina Mizell and the Grim Reaper. Oh, wait, no, that's just who the Nuggets saw in their nightmares last night after losing on the road to the Lakers. Gina, what's going on?
We're here to talk about Case Keenum, right?
No, I've been doing that all week, so.
Yes.
That's the First and Orange podcast, if you haven't checked it out yet, obviously.
I listened to it on the plane ride coming back to Denver this morning.
We're on the same page already. This is fantastic. But we're here today, Wednesday afternoon. Wednesday?
Yeah, it is Wednesday, yes.
Wednesday afternoon to talk about the Denver Nuggets, who, with their loss last night in Los Angeles, have fallen to 10th place in the Western Conference, and they're a full game behind a three-way tie for 8th place. What's your takeaway right now about last night and kind of where that puts the Nuggets?
Yeah, well, obviously it was a critical loss, and I think the word that I used in my game story last night is that I use the word catastrophic, which may seem that it seems catastrophic. Not that it is catastrophic, but that it can feel catastrophic just given the fact that, I mean, you can run down the list of all the teams that played last night. I mean, the Clippers played, the Jazz played, the Spurs played, the Thunder played, the Pelicans played. I believe that's everybody. So basically everybody but the Blazers, and they all won. So all those teams win. Denver, LA is the last game of the night, so the Nuggets kind of know going into it, like, all right, we need to win again to keep pace, or at least all the fans know it. Maybe the Nuggets don't know it, but all the fans know it. And they come out and lose that game. They had a 13-point lead in the third quarter, sort of unraveled at the end of that period. And then that sort of created momentum for the Lakers heading into the fourth. And obviously had a chance to win. They cut it to 3 late in the game. But another tough road loss. And these just keep getting magnified and magnified and magnified as we come down the stretch here.
Well, we'll get back to kind of the overall thing in terms of the Western Conference, which I think I tweeted as like Mad Max Fury Road right now.
Yes, I liked your gift game was on point last night.
I try. I can come up like one every week. That's okay. But let's get specifically to last night's game against the Lakers. You mentioned had a chance at the win, but I thought their real chance to put it away was with a few minutes left in the third quarter. They got up by, I think, 13
points. It was 13 points, yeah.
And then that bench unit was just awful last night. They're really having a hard time, it seems, providing any kind of punch off the bench. And last night that was the fatal flaw. What's just your what was the reaction that Michael Malone had about that stretch? Because once Nikola Jokic went out of the game in the third quarter, the Lakers just went on their run.
Yeah, I mean, that's what he highlighted, and he obviously didn't specify anybody in particular, but the group that was out there was Devin Harris, Will Barton, Trey Lyles, Wilson Chandler for a little bit, and Mason Plumlee, and Gary Harris came back in late, but that was kind of the unit that sort of started to let things slip away. And yeah, he called them out and said that he didn't feel like some guys were ready to go, that obviously they need to understand the situation and their job is to hold on to a lead. And, you know, not for me to personally single anybody out, because I don't necessarily think he was somebody who wasn't playing hard, but the fact that Will Barton had such a terrible shooting performance, like, that just really hurt the Nuggets last night, because he is that guy that can typically bring that punch off the bench, that can beat his defender off the dribble, that can, you know, make plays all over the floor. He's been so good for this team for the majority of the season, so versatile, done whatever this team has asked him to do. But it just kind of really showed up last night that when, even if he shoots a little bit better, then maybe that helps this team down the stretch. But you're right. I mean, it was a unit that, surrendered a big lead, and then they just kind of couldn't recapture that. The crowd was going crazy last night. Obviously, they were very into heckling Jamal Murray, which we can get into later, but that was just sort of, it felt like a team that sort of just kind of collapsed, under the pressure of a moment, and it did start with that bench unit, like you said.
Yeah, and I think that's kind of weird, given that, you know, look, we talked last time about how the Nuggets are young and they're in this position, and that's certainly true. I mean, they have the majority of their starting five, if you take away, Paul Millsap and Wilson Chandler are obviously veterans, but a lot of youth that they depend on. Mm-hmm. But you look at a Lakers team that's completely young,
yes,
perhaps the youngest team in the league, completely out of the playoff race, though, that they've shown great improvement, I think, over last season. And Staples Center is always, for whatever reason, a tricky place for the Nuggets to play. But it just seems strange to me that they're having those kind of moments this late in the season, with so much on the line, where you're just saying, how can you have this kind of, you know, flat performance when mm-hmm. when it means so much.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting just when, and this happened a couple of times, whether it was the game last night or whether it was the game in Dallas last week, where, I mean, why are you talking about energy and effort at this point in the season when you know there's only now 14 games to go? You are still, even though everything feels like the sky is falling, you're still only one game out of the playoff race, and we've seen how much things can shift from one day to the next, and so it's not like your season is over, certainly not, but yeah, it's a little bit surprising to see that Michael Malone has brought up, or even players when talking about them collectively, have brought up things like energy and effort and enthusiasm and just, you know, maybe not having that type of edge that a playoff team or a team that's vying for a playoff spot needs to have at this point.
Yeah. We're going to incorporate some questions. I think we kind of talked about doing it at the end, but I think some of these pertain to what we're talking about.
Sure.
So we'll just sort of mix them in as we go. On Twitter, at AndyMac970, he asks, because this is sort of what we're talking about with the second half, do you place more responsibility on the players or coaches for blowing so many double-digit second-half leads? And again, they were up by 13 points, you know, midway through the third quarter when Nikola Jokic went to the bench, or toward the end of the third quarter when Nikola Jokic went to the bench. My view is that, you know, I think that obviously in the NBA, you're pretty beholden, I think, to the way you're going to rotate guys in.
Yes,
and obviously,
yes.
You know, some teams try to tinker that. Some coaches try to tinker that more than others. But, I mean, you have to give your starters a rest. Like, that's sort of part of the game. But it did seem like there was that stretch during, you know, I think he called a couple timeouts right at the beginning of the fourth quarter. And it seemed as if there was almost this inevitability to the stretch that they weren't just going to be able to hold on. Do you think that there were chances, or there were maybe opportunities to, you know, to switch it up, to try to find some kind of other spark, maybe even go deeper into the bench?
Yeah, well, and I think the question is a good one, because it wasn't just last night that this happened.
Yeah.
I mean, you look back at even, you know, the Clippers game a few weeks ago, they had a 19-point lead
yeah.
and blew it.
Yeah.
Even in a game that they won in Cleveland, they blew a double-digit lead. Or in Memphis, that they let the Grizzlies, who are tanking, get that down to like 5 or 6 points before Gary Harris, I think actually maybe it got down to 3 before Gary Harris hit the big shot. So it's been a trend over the last couple of weeks, and so it always sort of feels like no lead is safe. I'm like sitting there like ready to start writing my story in the third quarter, and I'm like, well, this is probably gonna change.
Yeah.
So that's fun for me. But as far as the team's concerned, yeah, I mean, I think obviously you are sort of, like you said, you have your rotation, particularly at this point in the season now that, knock on wood, everyone is healthy, that guys kind of know when they're going to go in the game. You sort of know who you're going to be playing with. And, you know, there guys in that bench unit have had great moments so
yeah.
far this season. You know, Trey Lyles has had awesome moments so far this season. Mason Plumlee has done so much of the, you know, unsung dirty work and had some great moments. You know, obviously we talked about Will Barton. You know, Devin Harris obviously is still brand new. And has he been great for the Nuggets since he was acquired? Not really, but has he been terrible? Not really. He's kind of just been fine. But obviously still, I think there's still some learning process going on with him, even, you know, a month into his tenure in Denver. So it's just, you know, when collectively things kind of break down defensively, or you don't have a go-to scoring threat, then that's obviously, you know, what's going to sort of lead to those leads evaporating. And the other component of that too is that Nikola Jokic wasn't just coming off the floor because of the normal like rotation patterns. He was coming off the floor because of foul trouble in the first half too, so that hurt them as well. So there were a lot of things that, yes, the end of the third quarter, start of the fourth quarter is where the Nuggets pretty much lost the game, but I actually thought that the second quarter, when Nikola Jokic had to come out and the Lakers went 3 of 18 from the floor, but the Nuggets were already down 13, so they had to use that stretch to like crawl out of their first deficit,
right,
where maybe if it would have been a tighter game, that's where they could have like built a bigger lead or something like that. So no, you can point to a lot of different things as far as why this team struggled at various points throughout the game last
night.
Yeah,
when you have that sort of again, which very well could end up being the fatal flaw of this team if they do not make the postseason, and that is losing these kind of second half leads, and not only, you know, losing these leads, but losing them to teams that aren't, quite frankly, very good.
Right.
And
right.
So my sort of opinion on this is that nobody escapes blame
mm-hmm.
when you have this. So
no,
when I don't think you can say, is it players or coaches? I don't think there's anybody involved that doesn't escape escape blame for that, because it's not as if like it's one guy that's just like going cold and you can just sit him down. It's right. It's a collective,
right.
You know, team thing that's having them.
And who are you going to put out there? You're going to put Kenneth Faried back out there, who hasn't played since February 1st. You're going to put Wancho out there. You're going to put, you know, Richard Jefferson, Darrell Arthur, like, and that's no disrespect to those guys. It's just, you have your 9-man rotation at this point. And so I don't know what you do.
I mean, I agree. There might be something. I mean, there's times where Arthur's giving them a spark.
Yeah,
if it's true. Like a post player that they mm-hmm. need. And so I agree with you though. It seems as if you shouldn't have to be making moves this late in a season in a playoff chase simply to shake things up.
Like right.
if that's what's needed, then you know that's a whole new, I think, indictment of what's going on. You know, and then you get back to it too. The team is simply not good on the road, mm-hmm. and that we talked about this a little bit last week. But that's what gave me sort of the outlook that it's going to be very hard for this team to make the playoffs as they get ready. Now they have Detroit on Thursday, which becomes an absolute must-win game at home. And then they go on the road for, as you mentioned, the season-long 7-game road trip. And of these teams that, you know, I guess you could say from, you know, even from Portland, the third seed, all the way down to Denver, the 10th, Denver has by far the worst road record mm-hmm. at 11-21. Mm-hmm. How are they, I mean, I guess if there is going to be a time that they can snap out of that, it obviously has to be this.
Yeah, I mean, I think the only optimistic point that I can make about that is just that the whole season they've tended to play up to their competition. And maybe when their backs are against the wall, because as bad as their road record is, they've gone into Portland and won. They've gone into Golden State and won. They've gone into Cleveland and won. So maybe this, like you said, maybe this is the stretch that's going to define their season, which I've said a million times on this podcast and otherwise. And so it's kind of put up or shut up time. And so we'll see. But it looked like the Nuggets had kind of captured some road success. They had won 4 in a row going into that Dallas game. And then obviously that was a complete disaster, which again, we could look back on the season as that, as a defining moment. But it's not great. It's not great. And Staples Center in particular has been a really, really tough place for this team to play. Obviously, last night's game, you look at the Clippers game that they played there in mid-January that they lost. And then, of course, in mid-November when Paul Millsap tore his wrist and Mike Malone and Nikola Jokic both got ejected. Yeah. That was one of the worst nights of the entire season. So they got one more game there, not against the Lakers. It's against the Clippers on April 9th, I believe. It's in like the last week of the season, maybe April 7th, I don't know. All these days blend together, but that could still be a game that has massive, massive, massive playoff implications. So they're gonna have to figure out how to like shake the ghosts of the Staples yeah. Center off if they're gonna, you know, perhaps want to make a big push.
Well, maybe another silver lining from last night is just if you're a fan of, you know, like rivalries or drama, which is sort of something the NBA going back to the 80s has been built upon. Mm-hmm. It's built upon these sort of things. And there's a lot of, I think there's a lot of hand wringing by older fans in today's age that like, you know, there is no more beef.
Everyone's all best buddies yeah, and all that type of stuff.
Yeah. Right. And so, but you know, again, that I think is a time period that's not coming back. But with all that being said, it seems like there's real contention
mm-hmm.
Brewing between these two teams. You've written a lot about it. You've had some great insight on Jamal Murray, and Michael Malone said he was kind of just sick of it being a storyline, but obviously it was.
Totally was.
Just give me a vibe. You were there last night
yeah.
In LA. Just give me a vibe of the scene and how it felt.
Yeah, I mean, well, Murray was the last Nugget introduced during pregame introductions, and so the boos started then, and they were loud. And then they booed him every time he touched the ball.
Yeah, it reminded me of a college game.
Yeah, it was crazy. It was like, yeah, I'm trying to think of what I would equate it to. I mean, I guess it's sort of like when Carmelo comes back here and gets booed, but it was actually, I think, way louder than that. Maybe when Carmelo was first coming back with the Knicks, it, you could probably equate it to that. But again, that makes sense because he's a guy that left your team. Jamal Murray is like a 21-year-old second-year point guard who dribbled around Lonzo Ball and maybe trash talked. I don't know. But then as the game wore on and when it became clear that the Lakers were going to win, then, I mean, I wasn't allowed to print this, but I'll say it on this yeah. podcast. They start chanting, Murray sucks. Yeah. Murray sucks. And it was friggin' loud.
Yeah.
It was, I don't know how it sounded on TV, but it was loud. loud. Yeah. Like, it was shocking how noisy it was. But, you know, to Jamal's credit, you know, he talked about it after the game and was pretty, I thought, pretty thoughtful, or at least pretty, he wasn't, like, defensive, but he was, like, very forthcoming, or just very kind of, I don't know the right word for it, but he didn't shy away from talking about it. And obviously, you know, he scored 8 straight points in that first quarter and reacted after every single shot. So he was fired up. And so this is going to be fun, I think, you know, just for two teams that, you know, obviously the Nuggets and Lakers have some history, you know, in the playoffs and whatnot, but it's not like a division rival. It's not the Jazz. It's not the Thunder. It's not, you know, anything like that. If you know, Jamal Murray's going to be here for a while, which we think he will be, this could be fun for the next few years, just because of the budding hatred between. I mean, there was a dude that was sitting close to press row that, like, was screaming at him the entire game. And I actually tweeted, I'm like, I wonder what it's like to be a grown man that's, like, screaming at a 21-year-old millionaire. but he, for a guy who is a budding, young, promising player, but let's be real, like, hasn't done a whole lot in the NBA yet in like the grand right. scheme of things. I'm not knocking Jamal's talent whatsoever, what he's accomplished in 2 years.
No, I get it.
But for a guy of that stature to get under a team's skin and their fan base already, like, bring it on. I thought it was fun. I thought it was fun. He seemed to embrace it. The team seemed to embrace it. Clearly the fans had fun with it. So, hey, let's keep this going. That's my thought on it.
I think that when the Lakers and Nuggets played in the Western Conference Finals in 2009, that was sort of what it kind of brought me back to. That was a 6-game series, but pretty much every game was tightly contested, you know, or at least the majority of them were tightly contested, and there just seemed to be kind of a lot of bad blood, and LA just becomes this easy target, I think.
Oh, totally.
For sports fans all the time. And that's a young team in LA that I think is really promising. I think, mm-hmm. I mean, I'm surprised by how good Julius Randle has become.
Yeah, he was great again last night.
Yeah, obviously studying the draft last year, I was not alone in not thinking that Kyle Kuzma was going to be anything near what he has been.
And then he was terrific.
You know, and then Lonzo, for all his issues shooting, I think just really kind of, you know, galvanized. I thought that play where he stole the ball from the inbounds, kind of started everything.
Oh, yeah.
That ended up being a basket for him. And I thought really that was a really bad mental letdown by the Nuggets. And it just sort of seemed to steamroll from there. So, yeah, I think that's going to be, when you look at just how young everybody on the team is, hopefully it keeps going.
Yeah, because, again, the Lakers, obviously they're out of the playoff picture for now, but they've played really well since, like, the start of 2018 and since the All-Star break. And so, obviously, they sort of revamped their roster a little bit with the trade with Cleveland and stuff. But these are both two teams. You know, the Nuggets are maybe a little bit further ahead right now, but these are two young teams that think they're going to be making a push here in the next 2, 3, 4, 5 years. So maybe it's just a rivalry between two young teams that might both not make the playoffs, but if they both keep on the same track that we think they could perhaps be on, then this could be a playoff series down the line. And these could be two of the teams that are, you know, trying to push for the upper echelon in the Western Conference. So we might be seeing the early stages of a fun rivalry between these two teams. So like I said, bring it on. So it should be fun.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, let's hope so. Again, that's some sort of, I guess, a silver lining that they lost a game that they really needed to have. You look now at the schedule, and I'm curious your thoughts on, as we sort of set up, this is going into Thursday night's action, in which I don't think any of the Western Conference playoff powers are in action. So
no one plays tonight, which is Wednesday, which is very strange.
Or Wednesday,
usually someone has been in action, but yeah, Thursday is pretty stacked, actually.
Yeah, so right now you have the Trailblazers are in, obviously the Rockets and Warriors are 1 and 2. They're in a company by themselves, but then third are the Trailblazers, who are 4.5 games ahead of the Nuggets. Fourth seed right now is the Thunder, who are 3 games ahead. Fifth seed, the Pelicans, are 2.5 games ahead. Nuggets on the tiebreaker there. The Timberwolves in the sixth seed are 2.5 games ahead of Denver. And then the seventh, eighth, and ninth seeds, the Clippers, Jazz, and Spurs, are all you know, a game ahead of Denver. I'm curious in your thought, because you've been kind of studying the schedules these teams have left. At this point, it looks like Denver is going to maybe, in addition to playing better on the road than they have so far this year. They're probably going to need another one of those teams to fall off a little bit, to slip. What do you see a team there that their schedule sets up to have that kind of possibility?
At first glance, the two schedules that are the toughest in my mind are the Spurs and the Clippers. They both, you know, have Houston left, Golden State left, like just a brutal stretch of playoff teams, like, you know, consecutive games or whatever. But I mean, just to give you a glimpse of, I mean, we talked about everything that happened last night, and I think Sunday was actually, you know, a great example of teams just continuing to win, because Utah beat New Orleans, the Timberwolves beat the Warriors, and you're just like, man, okay, like everyone just keeps winning. But tomorrow's games, you mentioned, obviously Detroit is here, the Clippers are at the Rockets, the Pelicans are at the Spurs, Utah hosts the Suns, which they have the easiest schedule down the stretch, and then Portland hosts Cleveland. So, like, besides Phoenix at Utah, like, none of those are easy games for any of those other teams, too. So it's just, I feel like there is probably still going to be stretches where the Nuggets are going to win a game, a couple other teams are going to win a game, and then whoever lost on that night is going to feel like, oh, gosh, we just totally blew this, and our season is over. But like I said, the Clippers and the Spurs on paper have the toughest schedules remaining. Now we'll see, you know, Kawhi is supposed to come back this week for the Spurs, and what does he look like? Is he 100% healthy? Does he have a reacclimation period a la Paul Millsap a couple weeks ago? What do they look like? But you know, those are two teams that I think perhaps could trip up at some point. But the way that everyone's winning right now, and I thought New Orleans would fall off. I thought the Clippers would fall off after they traded Blake. So it's like, I don't want to predict anything right now at this point.
You just look at the streaks. The Trailblazers, 10 wins in a row. Yep. They're 10-0 in their last 10.
Yep.
The Thunder, 4 wins in a row, 7-3 in their last 10. The Pelicans are 8-2 in their last 10.
Yep.
The Timberwolves have won 2 in a row. They're 5-5 in their last 10. The Clippers have won 3 straight, 7-3 in their last 10. The Jazz, 7 in a row. 8-2 in their last 10. And then the Spurs would be the only other team in that though they won last night. They're 3-7 in their last 10. They've fallen off. Nuggets 5-5. So yeah, there has been a torrid pace set ahead of the Nuggets. Because I mean, that's the thing, right? Is how do you ultimately judge this season? I think going into it, you said that the playoffs, or not you, but that was sort of the thought, the playoffs needed to happen. I mean, this team has continued to build. They haven't been there since 2013, but they had a lot of the same pieces who now have some experience. And I think that there's so many outside factors, because I even remember these same things that they wanted last year when they didn't get in the playoffs, of getting your young players playoff experience, getting a fan base who hasn't gotten to experience playoffs, that chance, getting, you know, competition against one of those great teams in the West in the first round. There's just so many, I think, you know, tangible benefits to being in the playoffs, even if it means getting swept out of the first round.
Absolutely.
What's your view on how this season, because, I mean, the Nuggets could, well, there's 14 games left.
14
say that
games,
they could go,
left, yeah.
You know, 8-6, and they would finish 5 games better than they did a year ago.
Right.
But then still potentially 8-6, there's a good chance they'd probably be on the outside looking in.
Yeah, no, they probably need to win, I would say, maybe 9 or 10 games, which it's going to be tough, because even after that 7-game road trip, they still have they have 2 games against Minnesota. They've got a game against the Blazers. They've got a game against the Clippers, like I mentioned before. So no, they're going to have to figure some stuff out. But again, every other team has tough games remaining, just because all these teams vying for the playoffs are good. It's not a situation where in years past, even last year with this Nuggets team, that a 500 record is going to get you in.
Right. Last year at 44-41 was the Blazers in the 8th seed.
Yeah. So I mean, all these teams are what now? At least six games over 500. Like, so that's all these teams are good.
Yeah.
And again, when you talk about sort of how this season is viewed, I think if they don't make the playoffs, I think it's going to sort of just be viewed as a missed opportunity, just because of the unfortunate nature of Paul Millsap's injury. But then at the same time, you look at all these other teams, and Kawhi's been out, Boogie Cousins has been out. You know, you just go up and down the line as far as
Jimmy Butler,
yeah, of course. You know, Rudy Gobert, like, you just go up and down, and everyone has dealt with injuries, and everyone's still kind of in the same space. So you sort of just look at what could have been. You look at perhaps games that you should have won that you lost. You look at the times where you did play up to your competition and captured some really great wins is still promising signs of what's to come. But yeah, it's going to be really interesting to sort of study this season and sort of look back on it if they don't make the playoffs, or if they do, because this race has been insane. You know, I mean, we've both, I think, followed this league for a long time, and I can remember some good races, but, and maybe it's just because I wasn't studying it day to day like I am now, but it's like, this is insane.
Yeah.
This is insane.
It is. I think, you know, just following people who have covered the league for a long time too, it's sort of, again, unlike anything in recent memory. I mean, there was a few years back where I think Phoenix was 50-32, mm-hmm. and then they got left out. So there have been other years where, like, the back end of the race was super tight. But again, this is seeds 3 through 10,
right,
who are separated by 4.5 games.
Yeah, I mean, like you said, the Blazers have won 10 games in a row, playing out of their minds. Damian Lillard is killing it right now.
He's playing like an All-NBA guy.
If they come back down to earth like a little bit, like I say, they go maybe 2-3 in a 5-game stretch, they could fall all the way to like 6th or 7th again.
Yeah.
Like that just shows how you go from the highest of the highs of winning 10 in a row streaking to, oh crap, now we're hanging on to a playoff spot barely. Or, you know, the Spurs, they lost to the Rockets on Monday, dropped to 10th, now back in 8th like a day later. So it's just, everything is just shifting so much. So I know that it's not a great situation for the Nuggets. But also, a lot of weird stuff could still happen. So that's why it's so tough to predict. But it's going to be a wild finish, that's for sure.
You mentioned Millsap earlier, and the quote from Malone, I think after Sunday's was it after Sunday's victory over the
Sacramento,
was that I think we're kind of past the integration of Paul Millsap. Then you turn around and have a game last night in which I think Millsap had 5 points and 5 rebounds.
And sat at the end of the game.
Right.
Yeah.
What was the explanation for that? For Millsap?
Well, I think, you know, because Will Barton is who came in for him, which, like I said before, he obviously struggled offensively, but has kind of been in that closing lineup throughout the game. But, you know, obviously Millsap struggled with, you know, his offense, and he's sort of trying to take a back seat right now. He had a great game against the Lakers when they played on Friday. That was his best offensive game, at least since coming back. But, he played pretty good defense on Randle, particularly in the first half, and yet he still wound up with 26 points.
Yeah.
But, I think it's still just a process for him trying to get back in the flow. And he's not quite on the minutes restriction that he was before, but I don't think they want to play him, you know, 35 minutes yet. So it's just still trying to ease his way back into it. So, yeah.
Yeah, which, you know, that's the unfortunate part, is we had talked about this heading into it, is that they don't have time, you know, for that to happen.
Mm-hmm.
I kind of thought that Malone's, you know, sort of declaration that the integration was complete might have been a little bit premature, you know, just given that, you know, again, they haven't had that overall stretch of consistency in which, you know, he and Jokic have both played really well together. Doesn't mean, obviously, and because you mentioned the defense, that's the one thing that's been such a key with him. It was there, but they've got to get more than, I mean, they just simply have to have more than 5 points out of
And when you talk about the reintegration thing being premature, I think that also depends on what your definition of being reintegrated at this point in the season is. Like, what are you realistically expecting? Because I think at this point they're like, Nikola Jokic is the focal point, which I think is what they would say anyway, but like, it's almost like, we got to play through him and everybody else kind of figure it out. You know, Gary Harris is going to be steady like he's been all year, and then the rest of it is kind of is what it is. So I wonder if he had been healthy all year, just what everything would have looked like at this point, because they had started to figure it out before he got hurt, and how much would they have progressed? Or right now, are they kind of just like, what can we accomplish now in these last 15-20 games, you know, from when he came back? And it's not really the complete picture of what this would have looked like had he stayed healthy.
we'll get to a few more questions before we wrap this up. Ray Martinelli on Twitter wants to know, what was the mood like in the locker room after the loss to the Lakers last night?
You know, pretty typical of what a road loss is, which, I mean, you can sort of speak to this as well, that the quickest locker room access sometimes is after a road loss.
Yeah.
Because, number one, they really do have to leave. Like, nobody's, like, hanging around, like, after home games. I mean, Will Barton just takes his sweet time, and that's why we always talk to him, because he's the last dude in there. But, I mean, yeah, people were not happy. People were I mean, were they, like, angry and dejected and all this outward emotion? Like, not necessarily, but that's pretty typical for, you know, an NBA season when there's 82 games and whatnot. But it certainly wasn't happy. It certainly wasn't, you know, people laughing and joking and all that type of stuff. But I think they recognize what's in front of them. I think they realize they missed an opportunity last night. But you sort of do also have to internalize that and move on because you got to play again on Thursday.
Yeah, I mean, I think when we again, we always talk about the Portland game last year to start the kind of their last stretch of the season. It had such a sense of finality to it when they lost.
Yeah.
So it's probably not – there's not –
they're not there yet, not, no. Yeah. No, and even Jokic, Nikola Jokic was asked this kind of like, what's the state of the team? And he's kind of – I don't remember exactly what he said. I'm paraphrasing here, but it was – it's not over yet. There's still 14 games to go. So I think they understand that it's coming down to the wire. But, yeah, there's not kind of the sense of, oh, crap, that just lost us the entire season.
Yeah. This is a storyline. This is from Eric Lonnie on Twitter. If I pronounced it wrong, my apologies. But he asked, what is the likelihood that Michael Malone would lose his job if the Nuggets missed the playoffs? And obviously, as a beat writer, your role is not to opine about whether he should, whether or not. That's
I feel like I have to lecture some people again, like I did on Sunday.
sure. Like that's not your place. But no. But more so is just sort of kind of looking at the landscape of of what that would even look like. And I thought Matt Moore, you know, our friend, had an interesting point on Twitter last night of saying, like, if you're gonna make that move, a guy that has been here and is, I mean, it's clear that this has been building, and I would understand there would certainly be fair disappointment, you know, if they miss this, and he would bear some responsibility for that. There's no escaping that, but. You know, what's gonna change? As a Denver market, it doesn't. They don't pay at the top of the NBA in terms of their coaches. They're not gonna go get, you know, they're not gonna pull Greg Popovich away from San Diego.
Right.
So that's something that has to be completely thought about too, of who they would even get to coach this team.
Yeah, and I think you sort of have to start with the situation that we were just laying out here, where if at the beginning of the season you said, okay, Paul Millsap's gonna miss 45 games or whatever. You're still going to finish, let's just pick a number, 5 or 6 games over 500. Let's forget about, does that get you a playoff spot or not? I think most fans would be pretty satisfied with that, you know, given if you say, okay, you're going to lose Paul Millsap, your prized free agent signing for, you know, half the season, basically, and you're still going to finish 5 games over 500, 3 games over 500. I think most people would be happy with that. And so you have to sort of look at the whole picture and really, and how much of the, does this team make the playoffs or not? How much of a sticking point is that with the front office? Which at this point, only they can answer it. You know, as far as,
right.
Again, like you said, this team desperately wants to make the playoffs for a bevy of reasons, but how is that the difference between Mike Malone losing his job or not? And the thing is too, is there's obviously clearly a fraction of the fan base that is not happy with Michael Malone, and I feel like that's the case with any team. I've seen that with every group that I've covered.
The more vocal one as
well. Yeah, exactly. Every team that I've covered, there's always been a vocal portion of the fan base that wants the coach gone, and so I get emails, I get tweets about it all the time. And the important thing, and Matt Moore also mentioned this too, is that for the downfalls, which you can point to some lack of defense, some of these late game situations, blowing leads, whatnot. You can take that, but you also have to take all the good stuff. You can't ignore the good stuff and only focus on the bad, just like you can't only focus on the good and ignore the bad. So, yes, there's some faults and some downfalls and some, I guess, limitations over here. But also, this is the coach that helped develop Nikola Jokic and Gary Harris and Jamal Murray and has this high-powered offense and all this type of stuff. So that's you have to take the complete picture, and you also have to say, who are you going to guarantee that is going to be better than him?
Right.
And which, yet,
yeah, and when you have a bunch of young players too, make sure that it's, you know, somebody that those guys would really, you know, would really be able to ride with. That's that's an important part because those are your big assets. We'll close with this because it's our friend Vic Vela from Colorado Public Radio, who we both are big fans of. And he just says, are we screwed now?
Short to the point. I love it. So also, that's not NPR language, Vic. I don't think that would fly on the public radio.
Yeah, Twitter
I feel like I need to answer this question. Right. Am I very calm?
Whenever I've done interviews over there, I'm like, yeah, okay, I gotta be real quiet now. I'll let you, we kind of close it the same way. I mean, as last time of just, I mean, and I guess that question is in relation to the playoffs, because we just talked about it. That's a mark, but it's the most important mark for fans, I think.
Yeah. I'm still gonna say that yes, they sneak in just barely. But because I also, when we were talking last week, I sort of pointed to that game last night as they're probably gonna lose that game. Yeah. So talk to me next week. This time next week they will have played the Grizzlies, the Heat,
the Pistons
and the Bulls.
Yeah.
So where are they at heading into the tough stretch where then they'll have the Wizards, the Sixers, the Raptors, and the Thunder coming up, which is obviously a brutal stretch all on the road. So if they like lose to Memphis or to Chicago or even to Miami, then that's not great.
Right.
But right now I will still say sneak in with the eighth spot.
Yeah, I think that I'm gonna stick to where I think they'll fall out, because again, you mentioned that part of the schedule, but
it's brutal.
though they lose to the, I mean they've handled the Grizzlies, but they've lost to teams of that ilk, and they're not good on the road. So the good news, 14 games left, and when you're only back by a game, that means the math says you have plenty of opportunity to make it happen. So it's we're not sitting here saying that it's by any stretch impossible. They have the ability to go get it done, but it'll have to take something that they haven't really shown too consistently.
Yeah. And we've gone for about 30 minutes, and we've said Case Keenum's name twice.
Yeah, right, Case Keenum. Well, we we appreciate it. And that's actually a great pitch, I think, asking you guys to subscribe to all of our podcasts. Our colleagues Nick Groke and Patrick Saunders are doing an awesome job down in Scottsdale during spring training with the On the Rocks podcast. They'll be continuing to get great player interviews and stuff like that throughout the season. Always great insight there. You can subscribe to that one. Obviously, our Nuggets Inc. podcast, we will continue to have it weekly throughout the rest of the season and into the off season. And then of course the First in Orange podcast, Nikki Jabal and I just did yesterday, in which we give you good insight to what the Case Keenum signing means for the Broncos going forward. You can subscribe to all of those on iTunes, Stitcher, and all your favorite podcast apps. And please be sure to support local journalism and subscribe to the Denver Post Online. The first month right now is just 99 cents. We'd greatly appreciate your support. For Gina Mizell, I'm Nick Kosmider. We will talk to you guys soon.